The funny thing was, I'd had this ringing in my ears all day. Except it wasn't ringing, not exactly. It was more like something stuck in my head, underneath where my thoughts live, trying to come out.
You know, people expect you to have something.
I'm making a coffee, and I shouldn't be. It's too late in the day for coffee. And I'm watching the rinse cycle in the washing machine, watching the clothes in the tub, how alive the colours look, tumbling there wet, like they're dancing. And there's this sound. I thought it was coming from the machine at first.
A dog? A white dog, or...
And then I realise it isn't the machine. This sound. It's coming from inside my head.
Or a stick. They expect you to at least have a stick. Or glasses. Which is ridiculous.
Of course, afterwards. After it's happened. A thing like that.
They don't expect, and I do really believe this, people don't expect you to have, well, Levi's on, or a good pair of shoes. Just a good, not sensible, not in any way. I think they imagine that we, people like me, that we'll be in cords, and that we'll be quiet. And they certainly don't expect you to be carrying a book. Though why would they? They couldn't know that my favourite thing in the world is to be read aloud to.
Afterwards, you think that maybe you made it up, that memory, that sound in your head that wasn't ringing. That you've put it there, in retrospect, so that you can believe you had some inkling, at least. Your body registered it in some primitive part, knew that something was going to happen that day. Something was wrong. Because otherwise we're lost, aren't we? Unless there's some connection between us.
I told her, my ophthalmologist. I told her I didn't want a stick or a dog. I really didn't feel the need for either of those things. And she made a sound, a sort of like a half laugh. And I knew she was trying to get a good look at my eyes at that moment. People do. She was looking at my eyes and she was thinking, why does he have to go and make his life more complicated than it already bloody is?
I was about to start my period. I had that sense of it. One day I will actually make a note of when it's due in my diary. A big red P, I will. But I had that feeling. My breasts ached and I wanted a fight, a scuffle. And God, I was hungry. I wanted to eat meat, a big lump of it, pink in the middle, drink too much red wine and to have sex. So the fact that I had a date that evening, a blind date, and set up by someone I didn't even really like, was obviously a car crash.
That's where I was going that evening, to meet Wendy, my ophthalmologist. She'd got a new office behind the station. That bit where the old flats are, the ones they built for the workers on the line, with the cobblestones. They shot a whole load of the scenes from Lady Killers just round there, that bit.
I'd got a get-out clause, of course. A plan B. Friends were having drinks in Brick Lane from 7, wanted me to come. I said I might pop in later, afterwards, but I was determined to at least turn up for this thing. I hadn't been on a date for... And I'd run out of bloody perfume, which was particularly... Not because I'm a real perfume wearer, not on a first date. It's too much, isn't it? It's an overstatement. I just felt... I felt that my hormones, they were coming screaming out of my pores.
Because Wendy wanted me to see her new flash offices. She was showing off a bit. Well, not see them, obviously. And she wanted to talk to me about a new drug that was being tested. And she believed it was going to change the face of everything we knew about macular-related blindness, blow the lid off it. And she wanted to talk to me about taking part in a clinical trial.
So I left the house without anything on. A perfume, I mean. I wasn't naked. We'd arranged to meet at this Spanish bar that does tapas, just near King's Cross. His choice. And I was going to go and see Kath and Aunt beforehand, as they'd just moved to this semi in Upton Park. It's always good to do something else, isn't it, before a date? Even though if I'd known how far out Upton Park actually was, I would have set aside a whole day for it, a weekend.
And as I had a few hours, I thought I'd go and check out this second-hand record shop I heard about in Plaistow.
I mean, why do people have to do that? People used to just get married. Get married, then have a baby. But no. Now they have the baby first, call it something like Milo, and then move to Upton Park.
It's in the front of this old guy's house. He used to be a DJ, years ago though, back when DJ meant disc jockey. So he's got all these records, hundreds of them, in his front room in boxes. He's selling them, a couple of quid each.
I'm being unfair. It was lovely to see them, and their baby, Milo. He lay in my lap and looked up at me, smiled like a toothless angel. And I thought, I wonder if he can smell my hormones. And then Aunt gave me some of his home-brewed beer. That's the other sort of thing people do when they move to Upton Park, isn't it? Brew their own beer. And it was freezing outside. Crisp. There was something lovely about the air. But I was glad to get on the tube.
He read out all the track lists to me on the back of each sleeve. He just kept putting them on. The records louder. I was there a while. As I was leaving, he asked if the directions he'd given me on the phone were okay, and I told him that I'd got a cab from the station, that they were coming back for me. I gave him 60 quid for 25 records, and he threw in a box to carry them in, with a lid. I got some classics. I got in the cab with my box, and it felt like Christmas, though it was November.
I'm on the tube, and to be honest, I'm not sure about that homebrew, in retrospect. But I wasn't nervous. And I'm thinking, I should be. A bit, at least, for my date. And then he got on.
So, I'm getting on the tube at Plaistow, a box of old classics, and I've got just under an hour to get to King's Cross, which is loads of time because it's just straight through.
He sits down beside me. He's got that salt and pepper thing, these lovely bits of grey in his hair, and he's wearing really nice jeans. He's got this box on his lap, and I can feel that he's smiling, even without looking at him. Not in a mad way. Not in a madman on the tube with a box smiling to himself way like there's a head in it.
The tube isn't full, I can feel that. There's air, space. Though it wouldn't be, would it? Not from Plaistow. There's a woman next to me on my right. I can tell she's a woman before she makes a sound because of how she smells. It's sweet, but not manufactured. It's... Actually, she smells a little sweaty, but I can't explain it. It's like her insides, what she's made of, smell like a woman. And she's had a beer, I think.
And suddenly, I'm nervous.
And I realise I've forgotten how many stops it is to King's Cross. I'd come a different route on the way here. I'd come from Moorfield, so I'd got a cab from Old Street. I'd never taken this route before, and I'd just got overexcited about my new purchases, and I hadn't stopped to ask anyone.
I'm actually giddy. This guy sitting next to me, this stranger, is... And then he turns to me. He's facing me.
I'm sorry. I wonder if you could help me.
And I see that he's blind.
I just need a bit of help.
Of course.
As soon as she spoke, I wanted to ask her to read to me aloud more than anything.
When I say, of course, I mean, I don't even know what you're going to ask me to do, so it's just something you just say, isn't it? See? Nervous. Talking like a bloody...
Could you tell me how many stops it is to King's Cross? Could you count them for me?
Yes. Yes, of course.
She smelt even better face on, like coffee. Dark, rich coffee.
It's 10 stops from here. We're just leaving Bromley by Bow now, so it's now 9 stops to King's Cross from here.
Right. 9 stops.
Yes.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Normally I get the Piccadilly line.
Me too. Well, it's the only line to get, isn't it?
Yes, and she laughed.
Then there was a pause. No, it was shorter than that. And we both took a breath at the same time and turned away from each other.
And then we both turned back.
I'm going to King's Cross Station, so we could just... I mean, you could...
Okay. And it's records in the box.
And then he opens up the box to me, like he's letting me in. And I touch them, their dusty sleeves, feel the weight of all that. And for a moment, we're sharing it.
We're both imagining the music.
And I'm thinking, I don't want to leave this man. Not yet. And then we're pulling into Aldgate East. I'm not going to King's Cross. It's a date. A blind date. No offence. And I'm not going.
None taken. And she's getting up.
I wondered if you... Well, if you don't have plans... Whether you'd like to...
No.
No. No, of course you wouldn't. Stupid of me to ask. I'm sorry.
And then she's gone.
Stupid.
And I'd meant no. No, I don't have plans, which was a lie, of course, but I'd wanted to go with her. Yes.
Stupid, stupid, stupid.
But the doors were closing. They'd closed. And she'd gone.
They weren't even in the bar they said they'd be in. I trawled Brick Lane for almost an hour. This is before we all had mobiles. I couldn't stop thinking about him.
I was 5 minutes early. It was just before 7:25 when I got there. And I knew something was wrong, deep in some primitive part of my body.
We didn't hear about the fire at King's Cross until hours later. We were right at the back of the bar, this smoky bar away from the world. You could smoke anywhere then. Someone came in and told us. They didn't know how many people had been killed yet. It hit me then. He would have got to King's Cross just as... He would have got there at 7:30, just as it started, the fire. And it struck me that he probably would have been... He was fucking blind, wasn't he? I mean, what chance did he have? I started to scream then. Fiona put me in a cab. She wanted to come with me, but I wanted to be alone. I'd stopped screaming by then. But when I got home, I couldn't sleep. I was frantic, searching the flat, didn't know what I was looking for. And then I found an A to Z, and I got back into bed with it. It was all I had of him. It's beautiful. The tube map, if you really look at it, it is... It's a perfect piece of design. And I retraced those fatal stops. Counted them again out of respect, I think. I retraced his last journey. And it was then that I saw that it wasn't 9 stops. It was 10.
Wasn't till I got to the top of the escalator that I realised I was at the wrong stop. Something about the sound. And there's a longer walk from the escalators to the exits at King's Cross. I asked someone to tell me where I was, a policeman. And he took me aside and told me I was at Farringdon, and he told me what had happened. They didn't know much yet. They thought it was being contained, at that stage anyway. He asked me if I was all right to take another route, if I needed help. They were closing off everything. I told him I needed to get to King's Cross. That's where I'd meant to get off. He said I should avoid that immediate area for a bit and that I was a lucky sod.
And then I was crying and kissing my A to Z, kissing that little book.
I thought about getting a cab to Wendy. Then I realised everybody would be trying to do that. There'd be crowds on every street corner, and I've never really liked crowds. I found this tapas bar, not far from Farringdon, towards King's Cross, off the main drag. They were playing music, and I could smell the tomatoes cooking from outside. I sat down, and I ordered myself a plate of patatas bravas and some bread, some sardines, and a small jug of red wine. I knew I should find a phone, ring Wendy, let her know that I was all right, but I just wanted to sit there for a moment. Enjoy it, the smell of the place, the music, being alive.
I often find myself thinking about him. About how my single random act of, well, kindness that wasn't meant to be that. I just can't count to save my life, but I saved him. Accidentally, on purpose. I mean, it's not like we stared into each other's eyes.
I told Wendy. She was furious that I hadn't called her and only marginally placated by the realisation that I was, in fact, alive.
But sometimes I really miss him, you know?
And I told her that sometimes I miss the oddest things. The sudden change of light in the sky when it's about to rain. And when it stops. A child throwing back their head and laughing at nothing. The look on a woman's face when you suddenly kiss her without warning. But I still remember what those things look like. Or at least I tell myself that. Because otherwise I'm lost. And I miss watching the mixture of my coloured shirts tumbling together through the glass porthole of the washing machine like they're dancing. I told her that I don't miss having a white stick or a dog. And if it was all right with her, I didn't want to take part in her research. I'd like to stay how I am. For now, anyway. Or otherwise, how will she recognise me?
That's the reason I remember it. The date. The 18th of November, 1987.
Or me, her.
I still look out for him. Every time I get on the Piccadilly line. Which, to be honest, I get more than I need to. Because you never know, do you?
And I miss her.
It was him, not the fire, that I remember.
The girl who smelt of coffee and beer. and I'd like to thank her for her awful, terrible counting. And for being alive. Just to be next to her.
More than I remember most things, really.
Sometimes I just miss her.